F1A. Number 21A.
So we have come as far as to see that we can check our findings by using the measuring rod of the system itself, so that if we can find the layout of a book or a chapter, say in an order that is system intrinsic, like the word order, Christ order, Christianity order, science order, like the 7x7, or the 7 laid out in the Genesis order, in the subtone of the Genesis order, mind in 3 tones, spirit in 3 tones, soul and principle in 5 tones, life in 4 tones, truth then in 6, 7 tones, and love in 2 or 7 subtones, then we know that somehow our findings may be correct, that this book may represent an aspect of the system. And that is what John Dolly has done over and over with the Bible, and also, as you know, with a chapter on practice in the textbook. He called his findings usually a layout. And it is interesting to remember that he never, as far as I can remember, talked about the structure of a book in the Bible. He usually said the layout of this book is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, or he said it is a 7x7 or so. This was the layout of a book. Now, this is the point where he left us and where we went on and built on those findings, on that systematic findings. Because he never asked another question, which we then afterwards asked. Namely, and I remember that I asked it for the first time when I went at home through Joshua and then Judges. I gave those talks, public talks at home at the beginning of the 1950s, and I represented Joshua the way John Dolly did it, namely in the 7x7, just as you have it now in the books. And then I took Judges and I presented it also the way that John Dolly has brought it out in the layout of the 7x7. And then I asked myself, why should the 7x7 be represented twice in Joshua and right afterwards in Judges? And that was perhaps so the point of departure for a new development, namely to the big question, why does a book in the Bible, why does a chapter in the textbook give a layout of the 7, and the next chapter again the layout of the 7, and again the layout of a 7, why many, why not one? Why make it complicated if you can make it simple? This is the fundamental question that led us from the layout to structure. So that from that point on, we were trying to see structure. Structure in a text, and not just the layout. So if we take Hosea, well, we had the layout of the 7. If we would have taken Joel, we would have found the layout of the 7, Amos, the layout of the 7, and then the question would be, why always the 7? Why do we need 16 prophets if all or most of them are laid out in the seven? Why is not one prophet absolutely sufficient? This is the fundamental question. Now, one can see very easily that though we have two or more books in the Bible or chapters in the textbook that are laid out in the seven, that each one talks about something completely different. So this is an interesting question. It is the same, the word order, and yet they are completely different. How can something that is the same be at the same time very different? There must be an answer to that. There must be a logical answer to that. And naturally, the answer to it is in the question that each book of the Bible, say each prophet, is a part of a bigger whole. The part of a bigger whole. So that instead of taking only a text that has a defined beginning and end, which is consistent within itself, and say this is a unit by itself. Instead of just doing that, we can ask now, is this unit, this prophet, not just a part of a bigger whole? Of a bigger whole? And naturally we can say, yes, that is true. Every chapter in the textbook is a part of the whole textbook. We can say every prophet is a part of the whole prophetic age, of the 16 prophets. He is not alone. Therefore, the question must be asked, what is then the bigger whole? What is then the structure of the bigger whole? And so, as to be able then afterwards to define what each prophet is saying and what part he plays in the bigger whole. So we come to really to that question of structure, where we know that structure means that all the parts in the structure reflect the general characteristic of the whole. So we can at once see that each prophet must be a part of a bigger whole, therefore of another structure, of other categories, that it is only a part that is under a roof category of a bigger whole. Now what is that bigger whole? And how do we see the place value of a prophet in the bigger whole? That was not an easy question. And how does one go about it? So the first thing one does in this at this point is to ask oneself, have perhaps some of the prophets a common denominator? I don't know what the bigger whole yet is, but I can ask myself, have some of the prophets some kind of similarity? Why do I ask that question? The question I ask because science always says that we must reduce the infinite subject to categories, to simplicity, finding common denominators. If I have 16 prophets, are all those 16 prophets just under one common denominator? Or are some of them really expressing a common denominator that is different than other prophets? And so at that point, one tried to see, have some of the prophets a common denominator? And that is a very difficult spiritual question. You can't easily do that in an intellectual way. That is practically impossible. One has to have a cultured sense of the categories of being within oneself, so that one can suddenly detect a category that is dominant for a few prophets and other categories that are a common denominator for other few prophets, and little by little see that these prophets can be categorized in a few categories. For instance, we have seen that Hosea and Joel and Amos, that they have a common denominator. Actually, we haven't seen, I've told you, because we have not read them. But the common denominator is in there, you can easily detect that it is always turning around the nature of God, about God himself, about what he is doing to the prophet in those prophecies. That it's always saying that the common denominator is God. Then we have seen, when we go to the next three prophets, namely when we come to Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah, I leave now quickly the major prophets out. Then we have seen they have a common denominator. Their central point is not God. Their central point is the representative of God. The representative is the representative of God in Obadiah, Esau, or is it Jacob? Is the representative in Jonah obedient, or is he not obedient? How is that representative? Is he a rebellious representative or a willing representative? And if we had read Micah, we would have seen there that the question also is, what is that representative? What is his quality? And it shows, well, thou Bethlehem Ephrathah, you will bring forth the true representative. Who is going to rule in Israel? See, it's not the question, God is going to rule in Israel. The representative of God is being born and is prophesied as ruling in Israel. It's always the representative. Have you no king in with yourself, no counselor in yourself? And so you can see that those three prophets have a common denominator as God's representative, as God's likeness representing God. Or we take the next three minor prophets, which we have read together, Nahum, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah, and we could see the central point is not God himself, but the central point is always the universe, is always what kind of universe do we have? Do we have a universe of error, where error is more powerful than truth, Nahum? Or Habakkuk that questions, why is it that I always see error and not good? When I know that the universe should be good, that God's creation should be good, he looks at the universe and sees, what kind of a universe do I have? Zephaniah was the same. He was showing that he will destroy in the universe everything that does not belong to the true universe, and will therefore establish the remnant in Israel, so that the universe of good, like a paradise, will appear. And so we had the last three minor prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. They all had one common purpose. They all were talking about the temple. All about the temple. As a symbol for the structure of being. So Haggai telling us how to build the temple, with which method to build the temple. Zechariah showed the plan of the structure of the temple, and Malachi showed how to be a true priest in that temple, how to serve in that temple. And so you can see, through the symbol of the temple, they have one common denominator. All the other minor prophets never talked about the temple. The last three minor prophets were all talking about the temple. So that you can see the next step is that we put one prophet into the next higher category. Instead of what we do first, to analyze the prophet itself and see the inner layout of the prophet, the order that runs through a prophet, then when one has done that, one says, well, this is only a part of a bigger whole. So it is a part of which next bigger whole, of next bigger category. And so we come to a sense that always three of these minor prophets have one common denominator. So that there is now the common denominator for Hosea, Joel, and Amos. And what do we do now? We have to define to ourselves what these three have in common. The common denominator, and say the common denominator is that God, good, is the only power. That is the substance that runs through three prophets and not only through one prophet. So we put three into one category. And so in this way we can simplify again. Instead of having three, we have one. And that's what science does, to simplify. So then we have to use our very clear spiritual and scientific sense to define as an epitome what is the common denominator. And so the same thing with the next three, that we had to define what is the common denominator of Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah. It is that it brings out the representative or the Christ likeness. And then the third we had, the common denominator of Nahum, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah was the universe of idea and the remnant of the idea, that the remnant, the idea, will always be preserved, that remnant can never be destroyed. And so we had as an epitome the preservation of the idea. And the last one, naturally, the common denominator that everything has to work for the principle, the operation of the idea in its principle. And so, again, we use the method of epitomizing now four times three prophets, and give, instead of having 12 epitomes, we have only now four epitomes. So that, but that is something that needs a lot of spiritual listening. You know, where one goes around and makes a nice walk or sits back in a quietude and just listen and say, what is the category of being that is common to some of the prophets? And little by little, that comes out. And it is a beautiful work, that period of incertitude, and then become a little bit more definite, and a little bit more definite, and definite, until you say, why didn't I see it right away? It's so crystal clear. But that has to do with the purifying of our structural consciousness. So in this way we have now a reduction of 12 to 4. not to four prophets, but to four epitomes. Still, we don't have yet the matrix. You see, that is what John Dolan never did. He never compared, say, a layout of a book in the Bible that has a similar layout with another book in the Bible, and a similar layout with another book in the Bible. He never compared them and said, why are they different? What makes the difference between one and the other? So outwardly, as a layout, they had the same layout. And therefore he was right only to talk about the layout and not the structure. You see, because each one was not built in into a structure. Each book was complete in itself, so to say. But then we had to see that we have to answer why many, why not one? And so the first step was to put some of them into a common denominator. But then we still had open questions. Then you still have to ask yourself, but then why three prophets if they have a common denominator? Why not one if they have a common denominator? If they have definitely a common denominator and yet look to be very different, then what makes that difference? So it's always that point of the synonymy principle, which says, yes, that there is a common denominator. All the synonyms refer to one common denominator, to God, but in some field they differentiate themselves. So also with the prophets, you would have then to ask, but why does Amos and Joel and Hosea, Joel and Amos have such completely different imagery, such completely different message, though they have a common denominator? And so you have to ask again and say, well, what differentiates those three, though they have something in common? And you begin to ask yourself, what differentiates them? Can you see? It's always the same thing. First to see the common, and then within that common denominator, the differentiation. So little by little, one was again thinking about it and taking those three and seeing they all turn around God, about the power of God, and the power of God is always good. That's the common denominator of them. But how does that power of God, good, show itself forth? How does it manifest itself? And so one begins to sense, yes, they have a completely different purpose in view. And you come and say, well, Hosea actually only states that God is good and is the only power, and that there is actually besides God good no other power, that God good is the only power. That's all that there is stated there. But Joel, he also says there is only one army, there is only one power, that the army of the locust and palmer worm, canker worm, caterpillars are the same as the army of the Lord, again saying there are not two powers, there is only one power. But what differentiates it from Hosea? The differentiation is that Joel says, you know, God is translating your belief in two powers back into the understanding of one power. He shows that the power of so-called evil is translated through changing our standpoint into seeing that it is the power of God good. So one gets at once a different aspect of it, which says there is a translation taking place. Or when it comes to Amos, then one hears constantly that that power of God, good, says to evil, I destroy you. And right from the beginning, it's always a question of destroying everything that is unlike God. So that only that which is like God is left over, I will rise up the tabernacle of David again. So one begins to see, now there is a differentiation in it, and then you have to ask yourself again, is that differentiation something that is system intrinsic? Can I define that differentiation through the system? Can I see the differentiation by translating that differentiation into factors and elements of the system? And so I would say in Hosea, yes. Hosea just gives a statement, and Joel shows a translation. And I know when I say statement, I know that that is a word. If I say in Joel, he gives the translation, I know that is the Christ. And if Amos constantly shows that all the wrong in the universe is being destroyed, then I know that's Christianity. So I can translate again ideas, metaphysical concepts, into the system, into the category of the system. And so I say, oh, that's terrific. So that common denominator, which is the Word of God, that vertical, which is the Word of God, has three different aspects. The first aspect is from the point of view of the Word, the second, the point of view of the Christ, and the third is from the point of view of Christianity. And so this gives an indication which says to us, oh, that's interesting. How is it with the other three, with the other triads? Is that so also if I consider the second three minor prophets? If I consider Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah, is that also so? And so I have to go over them and say, now, what differentiates those three?